When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast. The only Ripley podcast gives you the news, views, and opinion on the weekend rugby action with the West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts and back catalogue on the Sports Podcast Network. This week, I'm joined by the Lensman, fresh back from Hong Kong Sevens.
Fresh from sharing a flight with my doppelganger.
Were you on a flight with Mike Friday?
Yeah, and Simon Amor.
Did you have your... please tell me you had your photo taken with him.
No,
with your glasses on.
The Sevens crew now are referring to me as Mike Friday.
Brilliant. Love it.
There's a picture on the cameraman group for that job saying, Dougie, shouldn't you be inside? And it's a picture of Mike Friday on the pitch.
Oh, mate, it's so good. When you messaged me, whenever it was, to say, could you send me the pictures? Because you didn't have any Twitter. Are they blocked Twitter access in Hong Kong?
No, I hadn't sorted out my data stuff. Very boring stuff.
Very boring. But glad you're back safe. And I'm also joined by the nicest man in Cornish Rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace. How you doing, Ben?
I'm good, thanks, mate.
Good. Before we go into a massive, probably half-hour rant about England, Argentina, I just wanted to say a big thank you to Duncan Keane. Lovely to meet Duncan last week in the Mall Over Invitational that never was. But he did have the pleasure of coming to watch me play rugby. Unexpectedly, call up on a Friday evening for Nuki against Bodmin, a game which we won. But would you believe I was on the bench? You know, when you're on the bench and you never kind of warm up properly, you just kind of meander through and go, well, I can sit here in a nice warm jacket for at least the first half because nothing's going to happen. Doug, can you guess how long it was before I found myself on the pitch?
I mean, knowing you, it's probably a matter of moments, right?
A matter of moments, indeed. Ben, it was about 17 seconds, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, 30 seconds. But also what happened in that game was the referee was pretty...
Ginger?
Yeah, he was very ginger, but he was pretty much on Nuki's side for about the first 20 minutes. And then Russ gave away a penalty and had a chat with the ref. And then we had three yellow cards by 50 minutes of that game. So, yeah, we were 12 against 15 at one stage.
Unbelievable. Oh,
making friends and influencing people, yeah. Weren't you, mate?
Yeah, but I didn't actually say anything to him. I was trying to make a point to the captain, and the point of the matter is that the referee was refereeing for the assessor on the sideline, not for the level of the match that he was refereeing.
Right.
And if that makes sense, hopefully it'll make sense to a lot of people listening to this podcast. You're refereeing a Cornwall League match not the World Cup final at Twickenham. Just take your foot off the cunt pedal for a minute, mate. Right? just back it up a touch and then you'll be all right. Anyway, it's enough about that. I gave away a couple of penalties. I didn't get yellow carded. Probably because Phil removed me at halftime. But there you go. Right, let's talk about some weekend rugby, shall we? Let's talk about England Argentina. I've seen a lot written over the last couple of days, a lot of which I've pretty much said before. Ben, I mean, where do we start? Let's start with selection first and foremost. What do you make of it? And was it the right move for a physical Argentina side?
Well, I think this you're sort of alluding to Smith and Farrell, but the thing I don't understand is playing a Toje at six, and it's my like hobby horse that I always end up sort of riding around the podcast, but Eddie Jones seems to like to have a second row at six and all right, with Laws, fair enough. Laws has pretty much converted himself into a six now, but Atoje is a flat out second row and you're moving him to six. You're leaving out Willis or, you know, Simmons. pick your back row forward here to put in two second rows, neither of which are as good as Atoje. I thought Coles did all right. I'm still not sold on Johnny Hill, but Coles isn't, you know, close to Atoje yet. And I don't think he's close to Willis. So I just think it's a strange move. All right, I'm going to accept the Laws situation. But I mean, what is it? Is it for clearing out, as someone suggested in our group, or is it for the line out? Because I seem to remember at least one back row forward in the history of rugby has been able to be lifted in the line out. So I don't quite know what his reasoning for it is, because to me, it adds a bit of bulk at the breakdown, but it takes away from the speed. And, you know, Argentina did have a fair bit of luck at the breakdown. You know, they picked their moments and they did it well. So I think that's a bit of bizarre selection. And then the Farrell Smith situation, well, he's gonna play Farrell, whatever, isn't he? So your question is, do you want to play Smith and hope it works, or do you just play two out and out centres?
Well, at this point, mate, I think we've been through this. I think we've already been down this road with Ford and Farrell. It's exactly the same road. It's exactly the same premise. You've got a 10 that wants to, you know, play, to see spaces, to play a bit of heads up rugby. Then you've got a 12 that is a 10 that wants to play 10 that doesn't operate as a 12. Therefore,
the selling point of having Farrell and Smith was, if one of them is at the bottom of a ruck, the other one can organise and get everything working. Well, that definitely didn't work on Saturday, because England looked pretty good for about three or four phases, and then they just looked like they were completely lost after that.
But if you say about the premise of another playmaker not being at the bottom of a ruck, then why haven't teams for time in memoriam picked another ball player at 10? Because it makes no sense to me. And the biggest blocker of this, I'm not even going to say it's necessarily Farrell's fault, because you watch Farrell play 10. He's probably one of the best 10s in the world at what he does. Game management, controlling the game. He kicks well. You know, he manages the game through. But when you play Farrell at 10, you know the sort of game you're going to get. Right? It'll be efficient rather than excited. And the clamour for playing Marcus Smith by the media, by fans saying, oh, he's the most excited prospect. He's no different to the way George Ford has played pretty much for the last 10 years.
It's actually a downgrade on Ford, because Ford at least has played with Farrell forever since they were in age group rugby. So they've made it work.
Yeah. But
whereas
when you watch
Smith's almost learning on the hoof, isn't he?
Well, when you watch Smith for Harlequins, go on, Doug.
Well, in my opinion, he's playing sort of one back, isn't he, Marcus Smith? He's not playing the same kind of rugby that he plays day in, day out. And I think if I'm going to sort of sum up what I think is happening, it sort of goes back to the Ericsson era England football team, where we've got a head coach who is almost afraid of I don't think he'll ever admit it, but I think he's a little bit afraid of what will happen if he doesn't pick Itoje, or he doesn't pick Smith, or because of the backlash to it. But in order to pick everyone that he thinks he should pick, he's got to play people out of position. And as we've said many times, all that does is end up weakening multiple areas of the team.
But Itoje should be playing five, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because he's not as good. There are probably 10 back rows in England better at being a back row than Laws and Itoje, right? But he continues to pick them both. And there is no one better at playing second row than Itoje. So I don't understand it. But with the Smith thing, it's a case of there's been a clamour to get him in because of the way he plays for Quins. Then we get him in and he plays nothing like how he plays for Quins, because that's not how Jones wants him to play. So what's the point of picking him?
Well,
you're not going to let him play how he wants to play, then pick Farrell.
My point exactly. And Smith for Harlequins has built a career on having Dom Brandt inside him and Esther Hazen outside him. So he can then pick a gap. He can get back inside. He can have one out outside, or he can go behind Esther Hazen and spin it wide, knowing full well that defenders, one, maybe two, are going to have to commit and bite in. So you're going to have a 10 and a 12 having to commit on Esther Hazen if he's going to go outside. So you've got your back row. If let's say you're coming off the back of a ruck or the back of a scrum, you've got Dom Brandt on your inside, so that's going to tie up your guard and your opposite back row. You've got your 10 and your 12 that are going to be looking at Esther Hazen potentially to stop him going straight through the middle. Then if you go wide, you're going to have space to be able to go wide into. That's going to make Marcus Smith look very, very good. It makes him look even better. Makes him look even better if Esther Hazen punches a hole and then offloads and away they go.
They kind of worked that for the try, didn't they? I know it wasn't Smith that made the pass, but they managed to get
Fokanasiga, yeah.
Fokanasiga and Tuilagi running at almost the same defender. He had no chance.
Exactly.
But it didn't happen enough.
No, it doesn't, because what happens is Owen Farrell is essentially a pivot man. He is not scaring a defence. So if you're a 12 and you're fronting, if you're a 12 and you're fronting up Owen Farrell, you're confidently saying, well, I've got this. No drama. He ain't going to run through me. Fact. Whereas if you are a 12 fronting up Andre Esterhazen, you might be pulling your 13 in a little bit tighter, or your 10 a little bit tighter the other way to help with a double tackle, which then will create a space somewhere else. With Farrell at 12, that doesn't happen for England, which means that the opposition can defend wider. They don't have to bite in, because they know the outside is not an issue, because they can hold their space and they can hold their channels.
I think
I'm not sure I agree with Smith's only successful because of the ball carriers at Quins.
No. It is what makes him successful is the ability of those ball carriers to hold defenders, and then Smith to pick the correct option based on what he sees. But it is fundamentally the ball carriers that are occupying the defence. If you don't occupy a defence, Doug...
But, mate, England have the options to be able to play that way.
No, they don't.
They have the ball carriers that can mimic that.
They can, but they don't.
But there's the larger issue for me is that there's zero trust from Eddie Jones in how Smith plays. So it's like he has to ask permission to do anything from Owen Farrell before he does it.
Exactly. So you've got two tens. You've got a guy that's playing 10 which should be your decision maker and run the game. But then you've got the guy at 12 who's the captain who wants to be at 10, but isn't playing like a 12. So your two choices is either Owen Farrell plays because he's the captain, but he plays at 10, then you shift Tuilagi inside and you bring, I don't care who you bring in at 13. That could be Northmore, it could be Slade, it could be Marchant, it could be Daly. Like, it could be a fucking China doll for all I care, right? But you've got that figurehead. That means you're going to have an inside runner, which would be, you know, your black ball, your member of the pack, whoever's going to take it on the inside of 10. Then you've got your outside ball, your Tuilagi, your straight up runner, who will occupy a defender or two. And then if you go around the back, you've got an option. At the moment, England do not trouble defences because their attack is so one-dimensional.
To a degree, but they did trouble the defence off of the first couple of phases and then they fell apart. So,
because I don't, well, how much of that is to do with the... I mean, who's calling? Is Farrell calling what they do after first phase ball from 12? Or is Smith calling it but having no creative no creative sort of direction because they have to play to a structure that Jones has prescribed? So for me, there's no better 10. Well, there's no 10 I'd rather have in multiple phase play than Marcus Smith, because he can create and he can manipulate defences, whereas I don't see that happening with England. I just see a guy that... England are almost in that situation that Sarri's are in sort of 6-7 years ago, where it was two phases and a box kick. That's their game plan. They don't score within three phases. It's punt the ball downfield, try and gain a bit of territory and get the ball back.
We went through this in the year, didn't we? Do you remember when that Autumn Nations Championship sort of came on and Eddie Jones went, well, we actually don't want the ball. We're just going to kick it away all the time and play.
Was it after Coles made that break where he got through and they were probably only, what, 15 metres out, 10 metres out?
Is that in the last sort of 15 minutes or so?
Yeah, it was certainly in the second half. And they chucked three passes along the floor and then they ended up back towards the 10-metre line. Through no other reason than no one was stood in the right place and they were chucking the ball all over the floor. And, you know, Argentina's second try came from that. I mean, the first try Argentina scored, you know, I don't think you can complain too much about that. That was just a brilliant try. But the second one just seized on a mistake. And, you know, I think both sides gave away a lot of stupid penalties, which were kicked by the two good goal kickers. But I don't know, do you guys think that England love that little flip ball off Sinclair a little bit too much?
I think Sinclair likes doing the little flip ball a little bit too much,
because he had a good game, but you know, I think that probably slows stuff down at times.
Yeah,
if you've got a fly half, two fly halves on the pitch, you don't want your prop at first receiver too often, do you?
Not only have you got two fly halves, but you've probably got three if you can include Slade in that mix.
Yeah, if Slade's on, yeah.
It's not like he's not a creative influence, is it? Mm. I just think the biggest problem England have is that the head coach is a complete control freak who won't allow players to have any creative input. And just wants them to play in a prescribed way, which is why I think Owen Farrell's is like his main man, because Farrell is a script player, isn't he? He's not a creative 10. He sticks to the game plan, does what he's told. Well,
it's
aggressive, it's the Saracens, in defense.
Saracens robot, isn't it? Like that's how they operate. And you could be successful in that way. And whilst it might not be everyone's cup of tea, Saracens have proven that style of rugby is an effective mechanism for getting results. But I don't believe you can have... the ability to have both is the golden nugget, isn't it? It's the utopia. And you won't see many teams actually strike that balance well.
Yeah.
because you've got the All Blacks who go one way, and then potentially South Africa who go the other. You know, France going through a little bit of a golden, without saying golden generation at the moment, but you know, having flair and stability is a bit of a unicorn for me. It's you need to have stability and then be able to play heads up, not the other way around.
Can we talk for a minute about Eddie Jones's sort of constant judge me on the World Cup stuff?
Yeah. It just justifies his job, doesn't it?
Well, if all that matters is the World Cup, and the only thing we should be judged on is that, why are we even playing these games? And how can the RFU justify 150 quid for a ticket for games that, by their head coach's own admission, don't matter?
I mean, it's a good point. And it's hard to justify it ever, those levels of ticket prices, especially when, you know, you see some of the reports from the weekend where all they do is they play shit music every 30 seconds in between the breaks.
I could justify it if what he was doing seemed to have a structure and a plan and felt like it was actually part of a larger idea of what's happening. But I don't for a minute believe that there is a plan. You don't go through Christ knows how many coaches.
He's changed another defensive coach, isn't he?
Yeah, you don't go through that amount of coaches if you have a plan, because surely the coaches should be part of a plan that sees you through a whole process. I heard rumours that Simon Amor, who was the attack coach in the last, was it last autumn?
Yeah.
Was almost driven to retirement after working with Jones.
Really?
Yeah. Completely fell out of love with the game. Was considering options for what to do afterwards.
Well, it's hard to be it must be hard to be an attack coach in a system that doesn't really promote any sort of attack.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems hard to believe that there's a plan when you play for 2 years without someone like Mako, Vunipola and Manu and those kind of players, and then a year out from a World Cup after basically discarding them, you decide that they're now the answer. I genuinely don't think the man has a clue what he's doing.
You've got to question the logic. So Sam Simmons going to Montpellier at the end of this season.
But the only reason I can see that having happened is because Jones has told him he doesn't want him.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But if he's not going to be here after the next World Cup anyway, now, I don't know. I'm assuming that, obviously, with the World Cup starting next October, whilst the likes of Simmons and anybody else that goes to France, I know the Willis brothers have signed for Bordeaux, apparently. There must be dispensation there. But are they kind of exempt from the World Cup selection, as being they are allowed to be selected for the World Cup because they won't have started the season in France when the World Cup starts? Or do they go to France after the World Cup starts? Does anybody know the answer to that?
I don't think anyone knows the answer to that, do they?
So yeah, you're right though, the likes of the Vinopolas coming back in, there doesn't seem to be any progression in what this England side are trying to do. And it's so devoid of any inspiration. I don't know if that's the right word to use. that
just desperate for this World Cup to World Cup cycle to end so we can get rid of him, because I think there's, you know, he's been there for 8 years now, or will have been there for 8 years, maybe 9 years, I can't remember, but anyway, a long time, and the careers of some of England's most talented players have been flushed down the toilet.
I read a stat of all the players capped or that have been picked by Eddie Jones in the last however many years, 7 years. I think it was 64 players have earned 10 caps or less.
And like some of his favourites people he's consistently picked have been dropped now, and they're playing probably the best they've played in years. Like Ben Earl was in the squad for years. He's playing out of his skin for Saracens. Like Daly wasn't in the squad this week. He's playing really well. And he's brought back Mac. Like, I can see the logic of Billy, but, you know, Mako, you know, he didn't look at the races when he came on. In fact, probably the only substitute that really did make any kind of impact was Van Portfleet. The rest, you know, you probably wouldn't even notice they'd come on unless they did something, you know, other than, you know, the odd penalty that they gave away. So, yeah, I think you're right. It does seem like there isn't, if there was a plan, the plan's been changed, and it looks like it's been changed about three times now.
And the whole mind games, we're keeping our cards close to our chest and all this sort of stuff. It's just fucking media bullshit.
How many times has a World Cup been won by a team that's come with a secret plan? And how many times has it been won by a team that steamrolled everyone for 18 months before the World Cup?
Yeah.
You know,
you knew what they were going to do. You just couldn't stop it.
Couldn't stop them. Yeah.
I think for a long time in the lead up to the last World Cup, Ben, you were saying we need to win every game. And I was like, no, we need to test things out. We need to try things. Jones has had 8 years to try things.
Mm.
We should be pasting everyone we play now. It is a character study in how not to build a squad, how to go game to game and be short term about everything. To have 8 years to prepare a squad and still be a year out from a World Cup and say, well, judge me on the World Cup. We shouldn't have to be judging him on the World Cup. That squad should have been together for 8 years and just be, as you say, steamrolling people by now. But we look more lost than ever.
Right. Like Henry Slade didn't make the original squad. Farrell supposedly had a concussion. Slade comes back in and ends up on the bench. Like, it's all so muddled. Ben Youngs still gets a game, still gets
Joe Cocconisiga isn't in the top three wingers at Bath, mate, let alone in England.
Yeah. I mean, in the 90s and the 2000s mainly early with the England cricket team, when they would start talking about, yeah, they may not have performed at county level, but they had something about them to make it test level.
Test match animal.
Yeah. Just slightly different. I get that in cricket, and I get it to a certain extent in rugby, but it strikes me that that's what they see in Cocconisiga. And
I think it is. I think there is a little bit there, and also he's the horse for the course, isn't he? Because if you look at every team Jones has picked before he came to England, not every team, because Japan didn't have any, but he usually had a big winger, like someone like Wendell Saylor or someone like that. So if Jones can, he will pick Cocconisiga just because he's massive.
Ooh, why are you so massive?
Yeah. And I think he does.
That's worth 300 grand a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your game plan, Eddie? I want a winger.
Massive winger. Massive. Yeah.
Does it matter if he's good? Not really.
It's frustrating from a fan's perspective. Like, I know he's the coach and, you know, he gets to make these decisions, but continually making what appears to be the same decision over and over again, expecting a different result. And I guess that for me is what the most frustrating part of it all is.
There's a lot frustrating about it, Russ. There's a lot.
There's a lot. There is a lot. Well,
could be worse. We could be Welsh.
We could be Welsh. We could be Welsh. Should we talk about it? Should we talk about this for a little bit? Before we move on, what changes would you make for this weekend against Japan? He's obviously going to make a fair amount of changes. It will deem Japan probably not as competitive as Argentina.
I don't think after that performance you can afford to make any changes. You've got to go with the side that you think you're going to start the World Cup with, and you've got to play every game with them, and you've got to win every game.
You can't underestimate Japan now. I mean, we're limited, aren't we? Because I think he's picked the squad already, isn't he?
He's called up Mitchell, isn't he? Instead of Quirk.
So he'll call up Mitchell. Mitchell will play. He'll drop Van Poorvliet and start Ben Youngs. And everyone will go, why the fuck is Ben Youngs anywhere near the side? Why hasn't he been jettisoned into the sun?
Because Duncan loves him. Do you think Willis will start? Do you think he'll stick with Itoje at six?
I mean, I think I will. I think he will, because I think he's just stupidly stubborn. But I don't think he should. So I'm just having a look at the squad now.
There's a crime.
I mean, he can only make cosmetic changes, can't he, really? I mean, Noel was quiet, wasn't he? So does he bring Murley in? Freeman played in Australia, and, you know, I quite rate him. I think he's a good player, so he could come on the wing. If I was able to pick a squad from, you know, outside of that squad, I think there'd be a couple of names in it. One thing that maybe if they have to relax the rules on players based in France because of what's going on financially, I wonder if they can get Mercer in there somehow for the World Cup.
Well, Mercer will be back in. See, this is what I don't understand. Mercer will be officially a Gloucester player by the time the World Cup comes around.
Yeah.
So the chances are he's going to be a World Cup bolter anyway. So it all depends on what they decide the rules are to suit each other, doesn't it? Really? I mean, looking forward to the World Cup. Go on, mate.
Mercer, Earl and Curry. That sounds all right to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with that. I mean, just looking ahead to the World Cup next year, I forgot who was actually in our pool. And our pool consists of Japan, Argentina, Samoa and Chile. You know, it's a fucking stroke of luck, really, that we've got that pool. Because if we were in a pool with Wales, Australia, Fiji or South Africa, Ireland, Scotland or New Zealand, France.
I mean, you say that, Russ, but we could have lost to both of them by this time next week.
Well, we could have done, but, you know, we've got a better chance of beating Argentina and Japan at the World Cup than I think we have beating New Zealand and France or Wales and Australia. I mean, we'll come on to Wales in a minute. But I'm really worried about our ability as a squad to win any international rugby matches at the moment whilst this decision-making is still going on. And while there just appears to be no plan. Oh, we'll just, you know, we'll kick teams to death and we won't, you know, we won't operate any sort of flair or ability to get the ball wide. Just makes it so easy to defend. I just don't understand. If you haven't got any wide threat, you're easily defendable as far as I'm concerned. So there you go. Let's talk about Wales briefly. I watched the Wales New Zealand game on Saturday, and you know, for all of England's failings on Sunday, I wish that had happened first, because watching Wales get their asses handed to them was, you know, it did put a smile on my face, I must admit. What did you make of Wales first and foremost, Ben? Because to me, they're in as bad a position as England at the moment, as far as decision-making goes.
Yeah, I mean, Wales were not good at all. The scrum half had a lively game, I think. Falatau did his best, but outside of that, there was nothing really standing out. And New Zealand, I mean, was it a record win? I think it was. I mean, yeah, they scored 55 points. They didn't even play that well. I wasn't particularly blown away by New Zealand, other than Aaron Smith and
Surveyor. Surveyor is something else.
I mean, I'm being a bit unfair. I thought the open side played well, and Barrett at 12 was really good. Papali, I mean, that was a great Papali, finish.
Was it Papali?
Yeah, Papali? I wasn't going to risk that. great finish from the crossfield kick when the game was still live. And, you know, Wales scored a decent try, didn't they? But, I think they got away with one a little bit with their other try. I think that was definitely a knock-on in there somewhere. And I think Tipperich did as well. But, you know, it doesn't matter in the long, great scheme things, does it?
I think anyone that's played rugby knows that he knocked that on.
But, you know, I mean, that Surveyor's dummy. I mean, that's not been seen since a few years ago at Nuki Hornets, is it? A dummy like that. Everyone seemed to buy the most obvious dummy in the world. And
it was the prop Smith, wasn't it? He got sent for a hot dog. Probably not for the first time.
Yeah.
And he was all over the show. I mean, I've seen Surveyor try that dummy before, and I don't think anybody's ever bought it. But he was immense. Like almost unplayable. The way he had that run in the first half where he span out of one tackle, ran over someone else, and just kept going when it appeared like there were three people hanging off him, and he was like nobody was even there. He was phenomenal at the weekend, and like you say, a bit of a renaissance from Aaron Smith.
But it was more like an All Black team. If you remember the teams of around sort of 2000, where they had some brilliant players, but they were never quite a team. Once they got into the sort of Dan Carter and Bowden Barrett teams, and
well, they had Richie McCaw. Yeah, well, that team where it was, McCaw, you know, Ritalik, Whitelock, Franks, Mialamu,
Conrad Smith.
Well, yeah, Marnonu and Conrad Smith. Yeah. You know, they had Israel Dagg. That was a proper team, from 1 to 15.
But with that team, if someone dropped out, they're a bit like the Australian cricket team, you know, through the 80s, 90s. Someone dropped out of it. They just kept going, didn't they? They just replaced them with someone else. Whereas now you've got a few individuals. I think from that team on Saturday, if a couple of those individuals were injured, you wouldn't fear that team at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got some time before the World Cup, and they're still managing to win games. So it's not a disaster for them. But I'd be back in France against them in a World Cup final, don't you think?
On current performances, yeah. I would say almost 100%. Because of the French physicality. I don't think New Zealand will match it. I know they were missing Ritalik at the weekend, but I think the French would have the edge physically, and I think they'd be able to shut New Zealand down. And I think last autumn when France played New Zealand and they had that like 20-minute, like New Zealand started to come back at the beginning of the second half, and then France just had that 20-odd-minute spell, and they just literally wiped the floor with them. Untermach and DuPont just went ballistic. And I just think France have that ability. I think France have that ability to go through the gears.
Yeah.
With stuff like that at the moment. Whereas New Zealand, I think they're very much a straight into fifth gear. And if we can't go from second to fifth, we might be in trouble.
Yeah. And we can't go from fifth down to third and just tie it up for a bit. Just, you know, settle it down and try and go for a few phases and take the sting out of a game. Because there was for a few minutes, obviously they were nearly 20-0 up, and Wales did rattle them for a few minutes. And then they come out after half time and it just, you know, they had Wales on toast. But you could just see the wheels starting to creak a little bit. And I think a better team than what Wales were would have been able to keep that pressure up. But Wales just didn't have the quality to keep it up. And I think, you know, bringing back Priestland, losing Halfpenny before the game probably wasn't ideal because they'd have had Anscombe on the bench to come on. But even so, like Owen Watkin and like, Nick Tomkin, I know the Saracens boy, like really rate him. He's not for me. I just don't think he might be good in the Saracen system.
It's what you were talking about with test match animals, isn't it? He's a great club player, but he doesn't seem to quite translate it to international rugby. You could say like the opposite is someone like, I watched the Scotland game and someone like Chris Harris,
yes,
who looks a decent club player, but keeps that up for internationals and plays well every week in an international game.
He plays better in international games than he does in club games. Like in club games for Gloucester, you could be forgiven for him and Mark Atkinson or whatever, Harrison 12 trees in the centre just being a bit, and he doesn't really stand out. He doesn't really, but for Scotland, he is one of those standout players.
Yeah.
And I think moving on to Scotland, while we're there, I mean, I watched a fair amount of this game. There were some absolutely thunderous tackles from Fiji. It was borderline delicious. Watching Adam Hastings get folded up into a small package was something that an absolute joy. It was one of the, you know, like you just don't see these big hits anymore, like the proper ones. And those Mueller's at Progressive Rugby started tweeting about, oh, we had whiplash. Oh, it's not just about the contact to the head. It's now about, oh yeah, well, he must have had whiplash because of a hit that hard. And it's like, you fucking like, give it a rest. Adam, get up. You've got minor women's whiplash. Move on.
Don't move. You've broken your neck.
The heroes at Regressive Rugby, though, keeping it real for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, those guys must be awesome. I'll have to try and work out who they are.
I think Scotland deserved to win that match because they made less mistakes.
They were better than Fiji. Let's make no mistake about it.
But Fiji probably had the five best players on that pitch.
Oh.
I mean, their entire back row was outstanding.
Mate, Tuisui is an absolute animal.
Beast. And he Bottier just is...
Was it him that marmalised Hastings? Was it Bottier?
That was one of the second rows, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? I thought it was Bottier.
And then someone just hit Darcy Graham from the blind side and in the first half when he bobbled that ball and it was just like, ow. And I can't remember which winger it was. I think it was the one that got yellow carded. He had an outstanding game as well.
Yeah.
And Bill Matter, you know, so, you know, they individually, you know, they had some outstanding performances, but they don't quite, it's not that they don't gel as a team because once they get the ball in hand, they're brilliant. But, you know, just the set piece and the breakdown, you know, historically has always kind of been a weakness for them, and it gets them refereed out of the game quite a lot.
It does.
And that's exactly what happened in this game. But, you know, just, you know, some of the passing, like, they just throw these rocket passes, don't they? Yeah. And they hit someone in stride, which, you know, is a weakness of probably Northern Hemisphere rugby, but they were great to watch at times.
Well, they're all expecting to get the ball, aren't they? In support, mm-hmm. in support lines. If you watch England, let's take Kokkinen-Seager, right? If Kokkinen-Seager is running down the wing, the chances of him offloading back inside are probably about 2 in 10.
Yeah.
Whereas for Fiji,
they're significantly lower than him offloading into touch.
Yeah, potentially. But for Fiji, they think it's coming. They're expecting it to come, so they're anticipating accordingly. Whereas for England, like for England or you know, whoever else, they know it's not going to come. Therefore, when it does come, it looks shit and doesn't go to hand, or they get bundled into touch or turned over on the touchline or whatever. And it's that whilst it doesn't always come off, it's just so good to watch. When they're in full flight, it is so good to watch. And, you know, as a bit of a rugby purist, it, you know, you love to see it. It's that sort of sevens mentality, isn't it? And, you know, like you say, whilst the set piece and discipline at times leaves a lot to be desired, when they actually play rugby and for periods of that first half, they played some proper stuff and they defended amazingly. I think fitness was a big issue for them as well. You know, in general, a lot of the players whilst playing in England and a few of them in France, there'll be others that just don't play at the required level for often enough. And the drop off in fitness after sort of 60 minutes with the Fijians is quite stark. And that's kind of where teams tend to, you know, you'll see them holding teams for 50, 60 minutes to within a score or a couple of scores. That's where teams tend to pull away from them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. And as an Exeter fan, I don't think there is a more overrated player in world rugby at the moment than Stuart Hogg. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think his sort of time as a premier, you know, blue ribbon player is probably over now, isn't it?
I think if Stuart Hogg wasn't Scottish, he would struggle other than Italy to get a regular game for any of the other nations.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't, you know, nowadays. I mean, how old is he? I'm just looking that up now. Born in 92, so he's
30,
yeah. So, I mean, it's a few years back in him, but I don't think now he would beat.
I mean, I watched him play for Exeter recently. And I watched it. Was it against Gloucester the other week? And he was fucking abysmal, like really bad. And I know Exeter are having a bit of a bad run of things, but when you've got your overseas signing, your marquee player, just kicking, slicing the ball straight into touch and making.
I was used to think there was always at least one straight into touch in Hogg, like every single game, even at his prime. And I think he looks bulkier than he did when he was a youngster. And I think he's probably lost a yard. So, you know, times when he's getting the ball now where before he would have maybe made a break and started a move, he's now getting caught. And I don't think he's accepted that's a thing that's going to happen. I think he probably still in his head, you know, plays like he's 24.
So is that why he's growing a top knot?
Yeah, I mean, and that's disgusting, isn't it? But, I mean, he wouldn't get in Ireland's team. He wouldn't keep Keenan out. And he wouldn't keep
Stewart out.
No. I think if Liam Williams was fit, you'd probably go with Liam Williams. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, thought so.
Talking of top knots, McCloskey played for Ireland, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of the Ireland South Africa game. I saw a couple of little snippets of, you know, South Africans crying more about a potential forward pass. And to be honest, it couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of people unless it was Ireland. So I couldn't really care less about either of those two teams. Honestly, got no interest. That's about it. I haven't really got anything else to say. So, you know, I watched some of Exeter Saints on Friday night. Exeter are in a real struggle at the minute, which makes it even more surprising. Like the players that have left Worcester and Wasps, why Exeter haven't explored that a little more. I mean, there's obviously potential salary cap implications for that, but. Well, I've read that Dan Robson is potentially off to France. You know, even if Exeter what Exeter lack is a real top class nine at the moment. Since Nick White left, their speed of ball has been a travesty in regards to speed. And someone like Dan Robson would probably fit the bill for getting them going in that way. They don't seem to have been they signed the Wasps hooker, I think, Frost. But other than that, they haven't really got involved in any of it. And it does make you wonder how much the salary cap and the financial situation is, you know, is impacting them when they called an emergency meeting for Wednesday, I believe, because they've got to look to sell some of their assets to pay back the loan they borrowed during COVID. So, I mean, at least Exeter are in a position where they're able to sell some assets to cover those costs rather than administration and all that sort of stuff. But just goes to show that it's hitting everyone, and you know, even Exeter are not immune to it. Obviously, Saracens are, but let's not go into that. Said with tongue firmly in cheek.
Genuinely think it's bad about the way that fans of various clubs are now just so partisan for their views that, you know, they can't see past the bigger picture. Looking at you, Exeter, and Saracens fans.
Oh, really? I mean, what do you, in regards to just not showing much compassion in regards to the other teams, or? Because I think, you know, London Irish potentially in trouble as well, aren't they?
It's more just the, you know, Saracens fans taking great pleasure in Exeter maybe not being in the best. But at the same time, like, there needs to be a little bit of understanding about how, you know, we aren't football fans, we're rugby fans. And I don't think there's any place in the game for some of the attitudes that are around at the moment regarding other teams that aren't your.
Fair enough. No, I understand. You know, I know what you're saying. Let's move into any other business. Ben, have you got anything non-rugby related that you want to chat through?
Just a television recommendation. The, SAS Rogue Heroes.
Oh, mate, I've been watching that. That's so good.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. So good.
Not real, though, Russ.
Knowing that, oh, fuck off, mate. It is real. Of course it's real.
Yeah. No dragons in it, so Russ is fine. But yes. I've really enjoyed it. I watched the 6 episodes in 3 days. It was just like,
I think I've watched 4. And you know my point, Douglas, it's not about whether it's definitely real, it's whether I can believe or not that it can actually happen. So, you know.
It is based on a true story as well, isn't it?
Of course it is. So, and it's good that they've used like proper character names, like as in, you know, Paddy Mayne is a big name in the SAS, isn't it?
So, And in rugby.
So yeah, there you go. So,
yeah.
But good recommendation.
Did you see, did you see, you know, one of the characters in it, the actor went to meet him. He's still alive. He's 102.
Right.
And the guy in real life was called Mike Sadler.
And, Yeah.
He got a picture of him when he was in his 20s, and the actor is an absolute spitting image of him.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. No spoilers. No spoilers here. Douglas, any other business?
I'd just like to point out there's a special place in hell for people who on long-haul flights decide to lean their seat all the way back and then sit forward, not leaning in this reclined seat position. Fuck those guys.
They recline their seat back and then proceed to sit up straight and not lean back into it.
Sit up straight and lean their head on the seat in front of them.
Oh, wow. I mean, how long is the flight to Hong Kong?
14 hours.
With a stop or direct?
No, direct.
Oh, lovely. You're not, you're clearly not in business or premium economy.
No.
I mean, let's be honest, you don't need the leg room, do you? But, you know.
Fuck you.
It's just talking facts. In fact, I'd quite enjoy traveling with you on an aeroplane. You know, I'd be able to sort of diagonalize my legs.
You want to bet?
Some of your leg room. I'll fight you for it. Before we go,
did enjoy the first class lounge at Hong Kong Airport, though. It was very nice.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Very plush. Don't get to jet set around the world like you. So, no. Maybe next time, eh? What I will say is, so at the weekends, I've inadvertently been getting up early, not specifically to watch the Women's World Cup, but I have found myself watching some of it. And the New Zealand-France game from Saturday morning, I don't know whether either of you watched any of it. It was very good, right? It was really good to watch. Other than the fact, yet again, was ruined, like seemingly ruined by regular interjections from our mate Tempo and Joy Neville absolutely loving the sound of her own voice. Anybody through, like, in women's rugby circles would have you believe that Joy Neville's Joy Neville's the Nigel Owens of female referees, to a point where she was like the best thing since sliced bread. She actively managed New Zealand into the final of the Rugby World Cup. It was quite spectacular how she managed to engineer certain situations so that New Zealand were able to win the match. And I'm not saying that she did it deliberately, like unconscious bias, whatever. It was phenomenal the way she refereed that rugby match. I've never seen anything like it. It was a bit like India Bangladesh in the cricket, where they went back out on a sodden field when Bangladesh were batting because they were ahead on Duckworth Lewis. Because we all know that India couldn't go out pre-semi-finals of the World Cup.
I don't know where you're going with this, Russ.
Nowhere, mate. Not going anywhere with it.
Actually, I'm on a ring road.
I'm on a ring road, yeah. But the World Cup final is this Saturday morning, 6:30. I'll probably end up watching most of it because I'll likely be awake. And what I have watched could have been the whole tournament could have been cut into probably 3 weeks or maybe two, semi-finals and final, because the rest of the matches were pretty pointless between then. I mean, you got teams winning 80 odd nil, much like the Men's World Cup, really. Like, yes, open it out to everyone, whatever, but most of it has been boring as shit. And for what it's worth, I think New Zealand will win on Saturday from what I've seen of the England and the New Zealand teams in the World Cup. So best of luck. Go well. Other than that, I think we'll get gone. We'll come back next week. Hopefully England will have beaten Japan. Again, I won't hold my breath. Doug, where are you working this weekend? Have you got any rugby on the agenda this weekend?
I'm working at the Barbarians All Blacks match this weekend.
Very nice. I didn't know it's an All Blacks 15, isn't it? Because they're playing Scotland at the same time. Like, makes no sense. Any of this makes no sense.
Correct, but I'm working on it, so it
makes no sense. No, absolutely. For you, it makes sense. What I mean is, from a wider rugby and games and players and I don't know. I'm rambling again. I'm going to go. Speak to you all later. Go well.
Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.